this morning kind of what my wishes are for our church family. And I really want this to be, in the terms of that Don often uses, a conversation. I kind of want that feel of a little bit of a conversation. I want to share with you for a few minutes. Mike's going to come share with us for a few minutes. We're going to take communion. We're going to commit our lives to the Lordship of Christ, and we're going to leave. I want to tell you my portion of this with a story first. My story goes like this. Yesterday morning, I had to take my wife to the airport. So this is a brand new story. And I took her to the airport really, really early. Got up at 3 o'clock in the morning to run her off to Tech Airport. And yet my son and I were going to meet up at 6:30 that same morning down in Kent, and we were going to go hunting together, which we did. Now, something, forget about the hunting part, but the point is, my son says, here's what we'll do, Dad. Instead of you going home and falling asleep and having to get up 30 minutes later, go down to Kent, let's just meet me at Denny's. So at 4:30 yesterday morning, I was in Denny's at the Kent Denny's on the Central Avenue and 84th in that area over there. Of course, you know, I thought, well, I was doing some work and brought my little laptop with me, so that was kind of fun, and sat there and read for a while. But immediately what struck me, and this kind of feeds into this, as I was sort of walking my way through all of this, I was struck with the waitress at Denny's. Now, I don't visit Denny's very often. I have nothing against Denny's. It's just not a place that it's necessarily frequent. It just happens to be 24 hours, and I happen to be there in Kent. Well, the waitress, and I don't know her name, and I don't want to highlight her too much because she doesn't come to our church as far as I've ever known. But let me tell you what she did. She walked in. There was a couple other little groups of people. Everybody else was really young, dressed very modern, unlike me. You know, these young adults out at 4 o'clock in the morning having a Saturday morning Denny's pancakes. The lady was about the friendliest waitress I've ever known. She was over the top friendly. She was, I mean, in a positive way. Immediately, you would have thought I went to the Space Needle. She was, how can I help you? Let me show you my list on the menu. Here are my recommendations for the day at Denny's. You know, and I'm sitting there kind of going, well, I mean, eggs and pancakes. I mean, you know, what else do you have at Denny's? This is my favorite. Oh, and this one right here, this one's awesome. She even went to the point where she sat down next to me to walk me through the Denny's menu. I'm dead serious. She really did do this. And I was going, man, you are cheerful at 4 o'clock in the morning. And she was just going after it, and she was so excited. And man, a couple other people at the bar on the little, you know, the countertop bar over there. She was talking about my regulars that are always here, and these guys and the other two tables, these young adults. She was over the top friendly. What does she do? She sells coffee, pancakes, and eggs. And yet, she did it with such an incredible sense of enthusiasm. I walked away going, man, I may have to come back to Denny's. In fact, she gave me this little coupon thing. If you register online and you come back to this Denny's in the next few days, you get a free breakfast over again. And then this other guy came up and gave me another. He says, I'll give you my receipt so you can double up. Just use two different computers, you know, and you can get a double at Denny's in Kent. And I thought to myself, what an impressive Denny's this is. And I've never been impressed with Denny's. Why was I impressed with it? I was impressed with it because of that lady. Don't even really know her name. In fact, I gave her a larger than usual tip, and she was leaving her shift. And I said, before you leave, let's tip now, because I'm going to be here for another hour waiting on my son. But it kind of made me think a little bit about the reality of what I want to be and what I want our church family to be. In 2014, it's kind of always a fun time of the year. I actually did spend a lot of time yesterday, last night, sitting in my office just sort of reevaluating 2013. I don't know if you do this or not, but I was not even doing it. It had nothing to do with this message this morning. It had to do with my life. It's just something I do every year. And it just happened to be a really good evening. It was a real quiet evening for me, and I was able to spend some time evaluating the past, looking forward to what might be next. And it made me... And I want to give you these words. And the way I want to tell this to you is I actually have six words. And I'm going to run through these relatively quickly. But I want you to grasp this. What would I wish for our own church family? This church family has been a part of my life for 3 decades. 3 decades. That's an awful long time. I was a young guy when I came into this. And yet all the years of doing this, I still have a great sense of enthusiasm about what God does with the church family. I realize it's a holiday weekend. I realize we're actually really a light crowd. I know that. Don't be intimidated or feel bad about that or feel anything about that. But catch this. Six words that I want to give you. If you want to write these down, this is not a sermon notes or it's not an intelligent thing, but it's really kind of a challenge. My challenge for us kind of comes in six words. Number one is the word awareness. Awareness. I actually refer back to the Denny's waitress. And, you know, you always think, now, a lady who works at Denny's who does nothing, it seems such a trivial kind of a thing, but a lady who does nothing but selling eggs, pancakes, and coffee. Okay? And yet, she noticed me. She saw me. So much so that she knew that I was not a regular and wanted to show me the Denny's menu with enthusiasm. And what she recommended, her three top choices of recommendation. Awareness. And the thing that struck me the most, and struck me a lot in recent years, has been that my greatest wish for a church family, for those of us who call ourselves followers of Jesus Christ, is to follow that exact same thing. First step, how do you become aware of the world around you? Who are you aware of? That's what Jesus did. When you walk through the story of Jesus, what was so... There's so many remarkable things about him, but on that human level, let me tell you something he did. He noticed people. He saw people. He was aware of who was there. If there was children that came, everybody else didn't notice him, he noticed him. If there was a leper who came and nobody even wanted to be aware of them, he not only noticed them, he noticed them, he saw them, he engaged them. When there was a tax collector in a tree, when there was a parade of whole groups of people walking by, he looked up into the tree and saw. When there was people that the rest of the world around him didn't even... They'd seen him so much, they stopped looking their direction. When they went by at the well of people, you know, there was a group of water and people wanting to get healed and following a lot of superstitions. Jesus noticed them. Awareness. My wish for us is to be aware. To truly be aware. It's not the end of the world. But the one thing that strikes me about this is that, and I've really tried personally to try to work hard at this. I cannot say that I do this always very well. But I continue to talk about this a lot in recent years, is that when we go to the grocery store, who do you notice? Who do you notice? Do you notice the checkout person? Do you notice the person behind you in line, in front of you in line? The kids that are there? Are you aware of the languages that are spoken in our community? Are you just even aware? Do you even notice? Or do we live like the normal human American? Normal human in the world. This is true overseas, absolutely, the same way as it is here. But life just sort of goes on and we live our own little bubble and we really all we care about is just this little thing that's called ours. Awareness. Second word is to personalize it. You really have to take awareness and move to the second level of that, and that is to personalize this. In other words, to internalize it, or in a real sense, feel it. You got to start feeling it. It's a step from not only just seeing it out there, but all of a sudden starting to relate to, in some form or fashion, that person that's out there. You can already tell where I'm going with all this, because my wishes for our church family have nothing to do with programs and nothing to do with, you know, big kinds of stuff like that. It's noticing people. The longer I'm in this world, the longer I deal with this kind of stuff, the more I recognize that ministry, when we follow Christ, is first making our commitment to Jesus Christ as Lord of our life. The second one is making a difference in people's lives. Not just, you know, fulfilling programs, fulfilling obligations. Awareness, personalizing it. Starting to have a heart for that person that you see. I don't know if the lady at Denny's had a heart for me or not, honestly. But I'd tell you what, if she didn't, she sure faked it pretty well. She asked me 10 times how well I was doing it and complimented me on my breakfast order at Denny's. But you know, you do have to personalize it, which is exactly what I think, in a sense, Jesus did. Jesus took it always to the next level of not only notice the guy in the tree, but begin to feel that, begin to relate to the woman at the well, begin to understand her situation and draw her into that. You know, one of the things that's helped me, I'm going to challenge you in this. One of the reasons this has helped me in my growing sense of trying to personalize my awareness of people in the world around me who are without hope, and that is prayer. I really started a few years ago making a prayer list of people that I meet. People that I meet. And when you start praying for people, I signed up for our 24-hour prayer thing here at the church family. And I pray every Sunday morning at 5:30 in the morning. Ann Turner prays at 5. I pray at 5:30. She always sends me a text at 5:30 on Sunday morning. This morning they're in Minnesota, and she says it's 9 below zero. Okay, they're at a wedding. And I said, God bless you. But in that prayer thing that we do on Sunday, in that prayer thing that I do almost daily in my life, I try to pray specifically for different people on different days, different missionaries, different people that have come across, even people that I meet. Personalize it. Number three, you got to own it. There's an ownership aspect of this. You start internalizing when you recognize that maybe, just maybe, God has a place for me to make a difference in that person's life. To own it. There's a phrase that we use a lot these days. It says, you know, making a difference in your world. Don't just let life drift along. Actually, you know, make a difference. The only way you're going to make a difference, any kind of a difference in this world, the only way that your life is really going to count for the kingdom of God is when you start owning some things. Now, we're all as Americans about owning stuff, but we're all about owning material goods. We forget totally about what it means to own up to certain kinds of people that God allows to put into our lives, to own up to it, to have a passion for it. This year was a kind of a different year for me in a good way. It was some great things about 2013. There was some negatives, but one of the things that I did an unusual Bible read this year. I read the Bible through this year, which was kind of fun, and finished it on Christmas morning, had it all planned out. I read it in a very different sort of a fashion than I'd ever had before. Read parts. And I sort of, instead of like reading it from beginning to end, I read sections. And I used my little tablet that I had to bookmark, and it really worked really well. But one of the things that struck me is I was able to read Old Testament, New Testament at the same time. I read the Gospels a couple times in the middle of all that, because the story of Jesus capped off everything for me, because I realized the Bible is God's story of God reaching down to man. And in reality, what I'm saying is God really owned us when he sent Jesus Christ into this world. And as I read the fullness of the Bible, and this is where Bible reading like this and starting to comprehend makes such a difference, I begin to realize that the greatest part about all of that is the fact that God says, you have an ownership issue here too. God gave up everything so that we can have life. And now that I'm still left on this world, there are certain things God needs me to own up to, because I'm part of God's great story. Which leads me to the fourth point, that is responsibility. There are some things that God says, I need you to be responsible for. Billy Arnold. It's, in other words, taking action to it. Being responsible for these things. In that prayer guide that I read through, on Sunday mornings, I pray for missionaries around the world. And I do a thing on Saturday mornings too that's just kind of cool. It's like people I meet randomly. And I have this, because I want to take responsibility. And I started praying for not only that, but countries and cities of the world where I know people. And my list of cities of the world are pretty fascinating. I know some people. I pray for Beijing, China. I pray for Yantai, China. I pray for Jakarta, Indonesia. I pray for Banjar, Indonesia. I pray for Hong Kong. I pray for Chisinau, Moldova. I pray for the country of Denmark and Copenhagen. I pray for Afghanistan. I pray for Mongolia, Ulaanbaatar, Mongolia. I pray for Seoul, Korea. I pray for Bryansk, Russia. I pray for Tver, Russia. I pray for Dyakovo, Russia. I pray for Vladivostok, Russia. I pray for Honolulu, Hawaii. I pray for New Braunfels, Texas, my hometown. I pray for Seattle. I pray for Ording. I pray for Auburn. I pray for Federal Way. When you start praying that way, reading God's great story that way, it transforms your understanding of your responsibility. I do have a place. So do you. My wish for our church is to move in this direction. Then in the fourth and fifth points of all of this are very simple. My wish for our church is to start redesigning our life. Redesign our life in such a way that we stop just living out life and letting it flow by. But we design our time, our talents, our treasure to own up to the responsibilities that God has given us. As a church family and as an individual, one of the greatest testimonies we had was 2 weeks ago when Don Turner stood up here, a senior leader in our church, a senior pastor in our church, who has for years and years preached about, let's get in the game. And he said, guys, I'm changing roles because I have to get in the game in a new way. Not a comfortable way, but a new way. A new challenging way. Redesign. That is true for all of you young people in this church family over here who are sitting there thinking about the designing of their life. I mean, I sit with Sean Slattery in a small group. I sit with, you know, I've had long talks with Mike Tinas back here, our missions leader and national missions leader in our church. And I hear these guys talking all the time. How do I redesign my life at whatever age I am? Redesign. And the last one is to engage. To engage. To make a difference. As you can tell, my wish for you, for us, for each one of us individually and us collectively, corporately as a church family is, let's own this sucker. Let's own our responsibility. Let's do what God's called us to do for the time that He's left us here. This is a video. I want you to watch this video and catch the spirit of that.
Bill, I really appreciate hearing your heart, man. I mean, what you just hear is you hear someone come up here and share their heart as someone who's been serving here for so long and really sees what it looks like to honestly serve God. And I want to share a very, very similar piece that what Billy said. I want to kind of expand one of those words that he said. And that word is the word ownership. My wish for our church in 2014 is that you would own our church. That you would own our church. You know, a lot of what Billy shared was kind of in the individual sense that, like, this is what I'm going to do to engage. This is what I'm going to do to take responsibility. And I want to kind of step back and say, as a group of people, my desire so badly for this year is that you would own this church. Here's kind of what I mean. I don't want you to attend this church. I don't want you to serve at this church. I don't want you to be a member at this church. I want you to own this church. As I think about it, here's kind of how I think about it, right? Like when I introduce my family, I say, this is my family. I use the possessive pronoun my, like, this is my. I own my family. And I would love to see this next year for every single one of us to begin to own our church in the way we kind of own our family. You know what I mean? This isn't like a possession in terms of like I own my family and I control it. It's kind of like I own this huge, amazing responsibility that really is something that I get so much joy out of. You know, you think about the way you interact with your family, the way you own your family. You know, you sacrifice for your family, don't you? When you have a family, you constantly, if you're married, you constantly put your spouse above yourself. Or if you have kids, you're constantly, you know, giving up what you want for what your family and what your kids need. I mean, go look in the parking lot out there. That's exactly why there's more minivans than there are Camaros in our parking lot, you know? Like, seriously, who wants to drive a minivan? Like, we have one. I hate it, right? But what's more important? To drive the coolest car there is? Or to do what my family needs? What would happen if we started as a church thinking about this place in that way? Instead of saying, you know, I attend Lifeway, or I'm a member at Lifeway, or serve in the youth group at Lifeway, say, this is my church. This is my church. And I know theologically speaking, Jesus, like, he really is the one that owns it, right? Like, I'm not trying to teach heresy here. Jesus is the one that owns the church. But what if we really understood and said, this is my church. I love this place. I love these people. Here's as I look through the scripture, here's how I think Peter talks about this. We're going to spend a little bit of time in 1 Peter chapter 2. And I'm just going to share a few thoughts. And my paraphrase of what he says is you got to own it. Just like Billy said, you got to own it. But here's what he says. I'm going to look at verses 4 and 5. Peter writes, he says, as you come to him, as you come to Jesus, a living stone rejected by men, but in the sight of God, chosen and precious. You yourselves, like living stones, are being built up as a spiritual house to be a holy priesthood, to offer spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. You know, you look at this passage, and what you see is something happens when you come to Jesus. This passage says, as you come to Jesus. We just finished talking about Jesus as our King. We talked about the coming of King. We had 5 weeks of it, including Christmas Eve service. It was all about how Jesus is King, but in that, we talked a lot about how he was rejected. He was rejected by the Jewish people. He was rejected by the political leaders. This is saying Jesus was rejected by men, but God said he's precious. He says, as you come to Jesus, as we come to Jesus, something happens. Something really begins to change. And the first thing that happens is we become part of this building. We become part of a building. Now, it says a spiritual house. And what he's talking about here, and in case you didn't know, this isn't the church. These walls, this roof, right? This isn't the church. We are the church. You know, we talk a lot in youth group, like, don't go to church, be the church. You don't go to church, you are the church. And that's exactly what Peter says here. He says, when you come to Jesus, you become like a living stone, part of God's building. Part of God's building. It also says that you become a priest. Become a priest. Did you guys know you were a priest? Well, a few years ago at youth group, we had SLT meeting, and for a while, there was a bunch of kids from the neighborhood over here that were in middle school, and they would show up early because they knew that the SLT, the student leaders, had pizza. And so they like show up early to have the leftover pizza, and it was really fun because they'd come and they'd talk, and we'd have a good time. And this one guy, I was kind of giving him a bad time. His name was Stanley, and I asked him a really straightforward question, and he kind of backed off of the question and didn't really answer it. And this girl, Anijah, super loud, she just goes, "You can't lie to a priest!" Just like that, right? Like, and she was right. I'm not really like a Catholic priest. She thought I was. But the reality is that's us. The scripture says that we are a priesthood, that we are all connected in this body. This is we are God's priests. I want to talk about this a little bit more, but I want to read verse 9 first. Same chapter, it says, "But you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for God's own possession." Here's why. "That you may proclaim the excellencies of him who called you out of darkness and into his marvelous light." You combine verse 9 with verses 4 and 5. And I think you see who we are and what we're supposed to do. You see who we are. Just as I said earlier, you see that we're part of a priesthood. We are priests. You know, Israel was supposed to be a nation that was a nation of priests. And they were supposed to be this beacon of light for all the other nations, so all the other nations could come to this nation of light and worship the one true God. And what happened? They failed. They decided not to fulfill their responsibility. And so God said, okay, you're not going to be a nation of priests. You're going to be a nation with priests. And so he set aside part of them to be these priests that all the nations could come to. And then what happened? They failed. They didn't rise up to do what God called them to do. And so with the church, what God has said, he says, now you are my priests. You are my priests. He describes us in two ways. He says that we are two ways that we're priests. First of all, he says we're holy. What does it mean to be holy? Simply put, he says to be holy is you are set apart as pure. God has set you apart as pure. But it doesn't stop there. Sometimes we think holiness is like, oh, I'm going to be holy. I'm going to be like sitting on a cloud. I'm going to be dressed in white, have a little harp. Or if you're Ted, have an electric guitar, like just hanging out. Like, no, holy is set aside as pure to accomplish what God has set before you. Holiness is always connected with this action. God's saying, I've got something for you to do. I'm going to make you pure so you can do it. He says, you're a holy priesthood, but then he also says you are a royal priesthood. You're a royal priesthood. We talked about Jesus as king. This is saying that you and I, we are part of the same lineage. We're part of the same lineage as Jesus, not by blood, but by adoption. We're part of the same family as the king. He adopted us in. You know, some families in this church who have adopted, and they found out it's a pretty hard process. It takes a lot of time. You've been adopted. And the process in which you were adopted is way more difficult than anything here has gone through. For you to be adopted, for you to become a royal member of the family and a priest, God sent his only son to die for you. We were adopted by blood, not by birth, but by Jesus spilling his. It says we're adopted into this family. We become not only a holy priest, but a royal priest. 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and chapter 7 says we were bought with a price. That's exactly what it's talking about. This idea that we're a priesthood or that we're God's people, it all connects to this same imagery that says God chose Israel and Israel blew it. And now God chooses us as his people. And here's what we're supposed to do. It says first thing we're supposed to do is we're supposed to offer spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God. We're supposed to sacrifice. As a priesthood, we are supposed to sacrifice. That doesn't mean we all bring our best goat or our best sheep and we build an altar up here and we march it up here and we have like an Old Testament sacrificial ritual. What do we sacrifice instead of goats and sheep and rams and sparrows? We sacrifice ourselves. We sacrifice in the same way we do for our family, our time, our energy, our priorities, our finances. We put God first. We let go of those things that are so easy to hold on to. We offer spiritual sacrifice that's acceptable to God. And secondly, we proclaim the excellencies of the one who rescued us out of darkness into light, of the one who adopted us by dying on a cross. Sacrifice and worship. I think this is Peter's way of saying you got to own it. You got to own it. As Lifeway, my desire so badly is that we would own it. I know I said I don't want you to attend. I don't mean like go somewhere else. I know I said I don't want you to be a member. I don't, you know, membership is great. You should do it, right? But what I'm saying is there's something so much better than attending. There's something so much better than serving in a ministry. There's something so much better than being a member. It's something that supersedes all that. And it's when you say, I own this. This is my spiritual family. These are the people I'm committed to. In the same way when I introduce my wife to you, I'm saying, this is the woman that I've committed my entire life to. When I introduce my kids to you, I'm saying that everything inside of me is intrinsically tied to where they end up in life and what they do. I'm saying this is my family, this is my church family. This is my desire is that we own it, that every single one of us own this. You know, as I think through what it looks like to own it, I really understand this is the spot where God's Spirit hopefully speaks to every single one of us, that every single one of us says, God, what does it look like for me to own it? What does it look like for me to be faithful, for me to sacrifice? But I have three ideas to kind of get you started. And if this isn't what God's saying to you, that's fine. Make sure you listen to what he is saying to you. Here's the first thing. I think the first way it looks like for us to own it is we have to own the shepherding responsibility of those who are young. And I'm not just talking about the youth here. We have to own the shepherding responsibility of those who are young. I think this looks like neighborhood groups, like we should have teenagers in them, right? We should include teenagers as adults in neighborhood groups are talking about how they're growing spiritually. Teenagers should be sitting right there answering the same exact questions. Teenagers, you have a lot to gain, but you also have a lot to offer. You really do. You have so much to offer, and I think our groups need that. I think that looks like we should be breaking down the kid venture, the little venture, the nursery room doors to help. I don't know if you know this. I don't know if you have the visibility. And this isn't me being like, right? But like, there's not enough help. Like, I know that there are Sundays regularly when someone comes to serve in Little Venture, and then there's not enough help second service. And so they spend their whole Sunday serving, and they don't get the chance to come in here and proclaim the excellencies of the one who rescued them out of darkness into light. And there's other of us who come and go. We have to own the relationship with the teens. As they walk through this room, we have to make it a point to go and look at them in the eyes and talk to them and say, how you doing? What's God doing in your life? How can I pray for you? I long to see after service adults praying for teenagers in the corner here, in the corner here, and in the back. I long to see that. A place where the teenagers really are cared for. You know, the second thing, I think we have to own Sunday mornings. We have to own what happens here in this building as the church gathers. We don't come to the church, we are the church. And when the church gathers, I think we have to own what happens, everything that happens here on Sunday morning. You know, I was telling Billy, I would love to see a two culture or a two service culture. Here's what I mean. Like, I get really sad when I see people come in and they greet a few people. And if this is you, I'm not like yelling at you or anything, but they greet a few people, they come, they sit, they worship, they hear the teaching, they leave, they say bye to a few people, and they don't do anything else, right? Like, I would love to see every single one of us say, this is my church family, and that I come here not only for what I get, but for what I can give. For what I can give. What's an extra hour and a half to serve with little kids? What's an extra hour and a half to stand around and welcome people who come through? Now, a few things that I don't know if you've noticed, we don't actually have a group of people that welcome. Did you guys realize that? Like, most of us are friends, so we probably don't realize it. But if you're someone new walking through here, there's one or two people maybe that really are consistently welcoming. It's even worse if you got kids, you know what? Because that table back there where you sign in your kids, for people who are used to what goes on here, they come in and they sign in their kids like no problem, and their kids go into the little room. But if you're new and you have kids and you walk in, you're like, what do I do? Where do my kids go? What's all this paperwork? Somebody help. Let's get out of here, right? Like, what would it look like if we owned that? I'm not saying the same person every week needs to be doing everything, but there's enough of us that we could share the load. I was talking to the gals who work hospitality. There's three of them. They do it every Sunday. There's one lady that shows up before everyone else every Sunday. What would it look like if we had a dozen people doing that? And we shared the load, and all of us owned it, and all of us said, I want what happens here on Sunday morning to be awesome. I want people to feel loved and welcomed and engaged and comfortable, and I'm willing to do whatever it takes to make that happen. What if we really owned it? We got to own shepherding our young. We got to own what happens here on Sunday mornings. And the last thing is we have to own discipleship. We have to own discipleship. I would love to see our neighborhood groups explode. Not explode in the way that, like, this person said that and it upset this person and so this person punched that person in the face. Like, not that kind of explosion, right? But, like, the explosion that says, man, people want to be in a group where they're loved, and these groups are growing. And so you got to look over and say, man, we got too many people. Let's split it into two. And so those two groups, they split up, and they start putting their arms around more people. And those groups get too big. And so they got to say, oh, man, we got to split up. And so those two groups split up, and they start putting their arms around other people. I would love to see every person feel so included and engaged, not because of Sunday morning. Growth doesn't happen here on Sunday morning. Hopefully you're inspired. Hopefully you worship. Hopefully you're able to serve some. But growth happens in relationship. In relationship, in small group especially. I would love to see that happen. About 2 months ago, I just invited like 10 people from our church into our small group. Right? I think my small group thought I was crazy. Right? Some Sundays, like all of them showed up. It was awesome. We had no idea what to do, right? But we have about half of those people that stuck around. And they're starting to grow. And they're getting engaged, and they're excited, and they're feeling loved. And those other five people, I think they're on their road to finding their own group, right? Like, it's a good thing. What if we did that with everyone? What if we just kind of say, How are you connected? Why don't you come hang out with my group? That would be awesome. We have to own discipleship. I know neighborhood groups don't work for everyone. That's why we have guys group. In case you didn't know, there's like this, it's almost like secret, right? There's guys, men's groups sprouting up all over the place in our church right now. It's like under the radar, like not a lot of people even see it happening, but guys are growing. Same thing with women's ministries. There's like gals groups, not Bible studies, discipleship groups that are sprouting up all over the place. It's awesome. All right, that includes teens. Bottom line, what if being connected to a group wasn't the exception? What if it was the expectation? Not expectation like this, I expect you to do this, but like, I expect me to do this. I expect myself to grow. You know, we're in a unique spot as a church. I think I'm past my time. I'm sorry, Bill. But we're in a unique spot. Don's stepping back. He's not leaving. He's stepping back. I get to step up some. I'm excited, but I'm super nervous. I'm super hopeful. My desire isn't to like make this like Mike's show. Woohoo! My desire is to make this Jesus' show. My desire is to really follow what he has. But the reality is, I can't do it alone. We have to own it. Every single one of us has something to bring to the table. Every single one of us, God has brought here to accomplish his purposes. We have to own it. You know, John Wesley wrote, and I don't agree with all his theology, so don't get on me, but John Wesley wrote, he says, give me 100 men who fear nothing but sin and desire nothing but God, and I care not whether they are clergymen or laymen, they alone will shake the gates of hell and set up the kingdom of heaven on earth. He's saying, give me this group of people who want nothing to do with sin and who want everything to do with Jesus. And we can't even imagine what God will do through us. Can't even imagine it. But we got to own it. Will you love this church? I guess that's what I'm asking. Will you love this church? Will you offer up your priestly sacrifice? It's like Billy said, we have a responsibility. Will you be part of the people here who proclaim God's excellencies? Will you own this church? Heavenly Father, Lord, I thank you for this church. I thank you for this church family in the truest sense of the word and the ways I've grown over the years here. And Lord, I just pray that would continue and that every single one of us would sense what your Spirit is telling us and how we can own it. God, we want to honor you, and we pray that you would help us do that. Pray in Jesus' name. Amen.